Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is a little bit challenging for me, obviously, not just the technology, but giving a shiur like this. I love seeing people and being with people. It's much, much simpler. So forgive me. We'll try our best. And if it's not clear, please ask. You don't have to mute yourself, like I say, unless there's background noise. Otherwise, don't. It's better. Yes, so good morning. We're doing the best we can in this crazy situation. And what we are up to is that we are in the middle of Parshas Truma, not the middle, the beginning of Parshas Truma. We did the first few psukim, which spoke about generally the idea of Hashem resting in the Mishkan, of us making a Mishkan that Hashem can have his Shechina rest there. And then we started with the vessels. And the first of the kelim, the first vessel which is discussed, is the Arayin. And we did quite a bit of the Arayin with a lot of commentaries, and it was very interesting. Now we're going to move on to this. It's a part of the Arayin. It is in Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. And here we have, on top of the Arayin, we had a kapiras, a lid. And with the lid, there were these special forms called the kruvim. Now, the truth is that the shir today, perhaps I'm hoping, who knows how long the situation will last, but the mirtz Hashem, not too long, to maybe review again when we're together, where we can do it clearer when we're face-to-face and all the copies and everything. But today we're really going to emphasize more and look in depth more at the kruvim. Not so much at the kapayres, which we'll read the pasuk, which is the lid, but the actual kruvim. So I'll just read through the psukim first. We'll select two or three rashis, and then we'll discuss a little bit in depth some of the beautiful aspects of what the kruvim really represent. Okay, so let's see in the pasuk. Vasisa kapayres zahav tahar. So you shall make a lid for the arayin. As we explained with the arayin was made out of three boxes. The outside one was gold, the middle one was wood, and then there was a middle one, a third box, which was in the center, which was again of gold, and inside of that went the arayin. Went the luchais. On top of that was what we called a lid, and this is now we're discussing, which is called the kapayres. It was made of pure gold. Amasayim v'chetzi arka. It was 2.5 amas its length. The amah v'chetzi, rachba, and 1.5 amas was its width. We're not going to discuss the lid very much today. I want to move on to what was, according to Rashi, a part of the lid made together. But what is this? This is called v'asisa shnayim kruvim. Zohav miksha tasa isam. So he says that you should make two kruvim out of gold, and we'll explain what kruvim are in a minute. And it should be made miksha. And we'll see what Rashi says. Miksha means that it's made one piece out of the gold. You carve it out of the same piece of gold. It is not something that you make and then you glue on top of the lid. Rather, it is shaped and formed and sculpted out of that same piece of gold. And where do you put them? Mishnei ktzais hakapayres, at the two ends of the lid, the two ends of the kapayres. I'll just do quickly the psukim, and then we'll see the Rashi to understand a little bit more. V'aseh kruv echad miktzei mizeh. So you shall make one of these forms, and we'll see what they are, on one side. U'kruv echad miktzei mizeh, mikotzei mizeh, and one on the other side. Min hakapayres ta'asu es hakruvim. From the actual lid, you shall make those kruvim. Al shnei ktzaisav, on both of its sides. V'hoyu hakruvim parsei knafayim l'mayla. V'hoyu hakruvim parsei, knafayim l'mayla. Seichichim b'kanfeihem al hakapayres. So here he's describing a little bit what it looked like. The kruvim shall be with wings, and it says here spread upward. It's not very clear from the pasuk, but as I say, we'll just read the pasuk, and then we'll layer by layer understand a little bit more. So it has wings. That's what we know so far. We know that there's some kind of form of gold. We don't know what, but they're forms of gold. They have wings, and the wings are spread upward. And in the English, they translate seichichim b'chanfeihem. They shelter the lid with their wings. So in other words, the wings sort of are on top. And upneihem ish el achiv, and their faces sort of towards one another. El hakapayres yihyu pnei hakruvim. towards the kapoyres, towards the lid, shall be the face of the kruvim. Sounds a bit contradictory. Do they face each other or do they face the lid? Do you see? It's interesting. So we'll have to see in a minute. And then it says, what do you do with this? So you, now we know we have a lid, and on it we have some two forms of gold, which have been somehow sculpted out of the gold. They have wings, we know. They are either facing each other, facing down. And then it says, "V'nasata es ha-kapayres al ha-arein." You put the kapayres, this lid, on the arein milamayla, from above. The el ha-arein titein es ha-edus asher eten elecha. And in the arein, in the box, what do? You put the edus, which are the luchais, which I will give you. And one more pasuk, what will happen then when it's all complete? V'ne'adati l'chasham, and Hashem says, I will arrange an audience with you. In other words, that's where Hashem actually speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'dibarti itcham mi'al ha-kapayres, and I will speak to you from on top of the kapayres. Mibein shnei ha-kruvim, from between the two kruvim. Asher al arein ha-edus, which is on top of the arein Ha'edus. As we said, this special Arain, which we call the Arain Ha'edus, this is the testimony between Hashem and the Jewish people. This is where the Luchais are. Es kol asher atzava oischa el b'nei Yisrael, everything that I shall command you in relation to the people of Israel. Okay, let's understand what this is. So now, if we didn't really understand much, let's go back. And I just want to, as I said, I want to do just a few Rashis, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper to hopefully understand a little bit more. And I do have a picture, which I will show you in a minute. Hopefully it's a bit hard, but you'll just get a little bit of an idea with our beautiful Mishkan book of what it looked like. But I just want to show you, so, you know, let me just show you a picture first, and then I will show you. So here's one. I don't know if it's visible. Is it? Can anybody see, or is it not clear? You can see a little bit. I don't know. I'll show you another one. There's another very nice picture. You can see the two forms there. Let me see. That's complete. Let me see something else. Here is a little bit more. Do you see here? That's the Kruvim, more in specific. I don't know if it's visible, but hopefully. Yeah, can you see? And then I'm going to show you, see, because you can see the wings. And then I'll just show you, we mentioned about the fact that they're actually carved out of the one piece of gold, and you could see that over here. So it's one piece of gold, and then it's carved out of the one piece of gold. Okay, so let's see now a little bit in the Rashi, and if you want, I can show you the picture again afterwards. So let's just do, I just want to do one, like I say, just a few of the Rashis, and then to understand it a little bit more in depth. So if you look at Rashi Yudches, Rashi 18, it says, Dmus, okay, so Rashi says Kruvim. How does he translate Kruvim? Dmus partsuf tinoik lahem. They each had the image of a child's face. According to Rashi, the way these gold images looked, even though they had these wings on top of them, but they looked like a child. Each one looked like a child. And then Rashi says, Mikshatasa, how do we make them? So as we say, beaten. What is beaten? Shaloi tasem bifnei atzmam. Don't make them separately. And then, as we say, kemaisa tsarfim, like people who do sculptures, metal workers. And in Rashi brings an interesting word in French. He says, shakirin soldier, which we would use in English as well, like to soldier something together to then, you know, sort of put it together. He says, no, that's not what we will do. Ela hatal zahav harbe betchilas asiyas hakapayres. Take a big piece of gold at the beginning. The hake bepatish, and knock it with a hammer. Ubekurnos beemtza, and a mallet, or whatever tools you use for metal. And you, like, sort of, you hit it in the middle so that you make this empty space. And then you form, while it's still attached, obviously, the Kruvim out of it. That's how you do it. Okay. I just wanted to see one more. Interesting that the Pasuk said that you should make two Kruvim and then it says one on each corner. Why does it say that? Rashi says, sounds repetitive, because you might think that you make two on each side. So here Rashi says, no, one on each side. Yeah, Leia?
That doesn't show the faces of the faces of the Kruvim.
Okay, so You know what, Leah, I'll tell you what. We'll talk about the faces in a minute because that's a very important question. We'll see there's different opinions of exactly what they really looked like. But in the pictures, they don't show it in the book because they say they don't want to even make an image of it. We'll discuss that. That's a very interesting part, what it actually really did look like. Okay, but just a very quick thing, just to see two more Rashis here. So as we said, according to Rashi, there's something fascinating, which we'll discuss later, that has actually a lot of deeper meaning. According to Rashi, you make the Arayin, right? So you complete the Arayin. You make the Kapayres, obviously this special lid, and with the Kapayres at the same time, you make the Kruvim. They're all out of the same piece of wood. And he says, you first put the Luchais into the Arayin, then you put these Kapayres on top with the Kruvim, and it's a complete, you know, entity, so to speak. It's very interesting. I mean, I wouldn't think there would be any other way. You can't actually put the luchais after you put the lid. Once the lid is on, you can't insert the luchais, right? But Rashi is very specific here because the Ramban has a little bit of a different view. According to the Ramban, you have to make the Arayin, make the Kapayres and the Kruvim, assemble it together, then open up the lid afterwards, put the luchais inside and replace the lid. Why? Because according to the Ramban, the Arayin, the Kapayres, and the Kruvim are part of one keli, one vessel. They're all part of one vessel, and one without the other is not a complete vessel. So first we make the complete keli, then we put what's meant to be inside. According to Rashi, it's actually almost two kalim, and one is not dependent on the other. So you have an Arayin, and it's true that the Arayin has a lid, which is called the Kapayres, and the Kapayres have these Kruvim, which come out of them. But the Kapayres and the Kruvim are separate to the Arayin. So according to Rashi, you can put the Luchais in even before you fully assemble the Arayin with the Kapayres. That's the ideal way to do it. And we'll discuss later what that means in a very beautiful concept. Okay, I'd like to just share one more thing and from Rashi, and then, as I say, we'll see a little bit more layers. Very interesting, because we said one of the big themes, one of the big purposes, and one of the most incredible, beautiful things, this Arayin with the Kapayres and the Kruvim, they were all placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's where their place was, in the Holy of Holies. And we know that the Holy of Holies was entered only once a year by the Kohen Gadol, so it wasn't a very accessible place. And yet, fascinatingly enough, we say that that's where Hashem communicated to Moshe through. And Rashi has an interesting question, because Rashi says that it says over here that Hashem will speak. Hashem says to Moshe, I will speak to you from between the two Kruvim, which is on top of the Arayin, on the Kapayres. That's where my voice will come out. And yet we find someplace else in Chumash where it talks about in Chumash Vayikra, I think, where Hashem actually communicates with Moshe, and it says that Moshe would come into the Kodesh, right, into the other part of the Mishkan, and then he would hear the voice of Hashem. Seems to contradict. Where did the voice come from? So Rashi says, no, there's no contradiction. They both make sense. They both fit together. Because there's even a third pasuk, and that solves the contradiction. And Rashi says, yeah.
Look at the phone, and when you point it on the phone, says that Safari cannot open the page because the address is invalid. So maybe that's why other people cannot
go on. I'm so sorry. I don't know. I don't know this technology at all. I feel bad. Cannot open it. Yes, I don't know. I feel bad. I mean, I don't know.
I can make a suggestion.
Yes.
If they're looking on their phone, they need to click to do it through the device. On the computer, it's easier, but
right.
There's an option to do it through a device, but I think, can I make a suggestion that we do all mute? We mute ourselves while we're listening to you, and if we have a question, we can unmute you.
Sure, Leon.
Background noise from other people.
Sure, no problem. Sure, definitely. Yeah, if people can mute themselves, and then if they have a question, definitely.
Also, I'm not sure if I missed, but do we have a source, like
Okay, so yes, I feel bad. So if you have, usually I would give out, but it's Chumash, yeah, it's Chumash Shemais, and it's Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25, and we're doing the Psukim from, we were reading the Psukim from Pasuk Yud Zayin, which is verse 17, through Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. So we're really just finishing it. Sorry, Michelle. Yeah. So we were just finishing. So just to finish this concept, where did actually Hashem speak to him? So it says like this, that there's another pasuk. So what would happen is that Moshe Rabbeinu would actually come into the Mishkan, and then he would hear the voice emanating from between the kapayres. So the voice always came from there, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from between the Kruvim, on the Kapayres, you know, above the Arayin, so to speak. But where did Moshe Rabbeinu actually hear it? It was in the, he was standing behind the other curtain, right? Behind the Parakas. So the voice always came from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but Moshe Rabbeinu heard it standing in a different position. Okay, this is all a little bit of the technicality, a drop. Like I say, had we been doing it together, we would have done it much more. But I just want to discuss a little bit more to understand what these kruvim are, what they looked like. And as Leah said, what type of image were they and how they could make. And we had this question earlier. It's very interesting how we're just, the Jewish people had just received the Torah not long before, stood at Har Sinai, and the first two of the Aseres HaDibreis, Anoichi Hashem Aleikecha, I am Hashem, your God. And then what does it say? You shall not make any images. And this sounds like a real image. I mean, this sounds as image as you can get, so to speak. Okay. So that's a big question. So just to understand, first of all, what does this look like? And what is this idea of these kruvim? Okay, so it's a very beautiful thing. So the word kruv, first of all, it's an interesting word. In English, C-H-E-R-U-B, I never know how to pronounce it exactly. But are these images are called kruvim? And it explains actually in the Gemara in Chagiga, it says, what's a kruv? In Bavel, a child is called a ravia, apparently. A child. And kiruv is kiravia, like a child. Sorry, maybe people can mute themselves so that there isn't the background noise. That would be better. And yeah, so like a child. So what we say is that these were the image of these two golden things were children, two children. That is like a child. Or there's another opinion. It's similar to what Yecheskel saw in the, you know, Maisa Merkava, when he saw this incredible image of the chariot, and he saw one of a man and one of a child, the face of a man, the face of a child. So according to some opinions, one of them had the face of a man and one of them had the face of a child. There is another opinion that they were two children, but one female and one male. So it's all different opinions exactly what they really looked like. They definitely had these wings, which we'll see in a minute, what do the wings represent and what does the whole thing. So very interesting. It says like this, that so according to Rashi, as we say, it seems that they were both the image of children's faces. That's what it seems. According to the Rashbam and Chizkuni, it seems that they were like winged birds. Fascinating. So that's why they had those wings. And that's the idea, is that it's showing us that just like birds fly in the sky, what is in the Arayin is the Torah, and the Torah is from the heavens, is a gift from the heavens. So the idea being that we should realize the gift that we have, a piece of heaven down here. So that's another opinion. And Rabbeinu Bechaye brings also an interesting thing. He says, as we said before, that one is a child, one is a man. And the idea being that it shows like the intense love between a father and his child. Okay, so now we have a very interesting thing. And I would like to go now, and I'm sorry, I don't have a source for you. I feel bad, I'm gonna have to just read you, and hopefully it will be clear. If it's not, please ask. I want to just read you three small pieces from the Gemara, which describes when the Jewish people were able to actually see this. Because this is such a magnificent, if you want to say, concept, and we'll see soon what it, obviously it's showing the love of Hashem. It's these two golden images, if you want to say, on top of the Arayin. But where are they? They're in the Holy of Holies, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was a pareches, this curtain, and nobody was able to see it. So what purpose would it serve if nobody was ever able to see it? So in the Gemara, actually this is from the Gemara Yuma, it says in Daf Nun Dalid, Amud Beis, it says like this, the Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish, B'shoah She'nichnesu Necharim Leheichal. Now I'll just read you something fascinating, which we'll discuss in a minute. It tells us something very interesting, also describing them. That at the time, and this is talking about, unfortunately, the time of the Churban, the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and when they entered into the Beis HaMikdash to destroy it, it says, Ra'u Kruvim Hama'irin Zebazeh. They saw these Kruvim, and they were joined together. What did they do with them? Haitzion Lashuk, they took them out to the marketplace, the Amru, and they said, Yisrael halalu, shebrchasan bracha uklalasan klala. So they said, these Jews who consider themselves so high and like so high morally and talk about not serving idols and not having images, and when they give a blessing, it's a blessing, and when they give a curse, it's a curse. And they're so in touch with Hashem. And what do? They take out these images and they said like this. They said, Yasku bidvarim halalu. They make fun of the Jewish people. Look what they have in their holiest place. It looks like to us the worst kind of idol worship, if you want to say. And even worse than that, in a way, the fact is, and we'll see, it says like this, that they were hugging each other and it was a male and a female. So they said, look at the images that they keep in their holiest place. So they mocked the Jewish people. And it actually says, Kol mechabdeha yiziluha. That's what it says in Eicha. Kol mechabdeha yiziluha ki ra'u ervasa. All who once respected her debased her because they saw her nakedness. So it was actually used in a very, very embarrassing way for the Jewish people at the time of the Churban. That's how the Babylonians saw it, so to speak. What was it? It was what we see from here is that it was two images, a male and a female, and they were hugging each other. They took it outside. Okay, but let's go a little bit back. Go back a little bit. And the Gemara describes in the time of glory, not in the time of destruction. When were the Jewish people able to see? When did they benefit from the Kruvim? So it says a very interesting thing. It says that, this is also in the Gemara Yuma, it says, Amar Rabbi Ketina, so Rabbi Ketina says, B'shah shahayu Yisrael oilin l'regel, when the Jewish people would go up on the Beis HaMikdash, right, go to Aliyah l'regel on Yom Tif, when they would go to the Beis HaMikdash, Megaylalim lahem es hapareches, so the Kahanim would roll up the curtain for them, the curtain that was between the Kodesh Kadashim and the Kodesh, and what would happen is, Umarin lahem es hakruvim shahayu ma'irim zebazeh, and they would show the Jewish people would get a glimpse of this beautiful sight of the two kruvim, and how they were hugging each other. And what was the idea? And they would say, V'aymim lahem, the Kaihanim would say to the Jewish people, Re'uchi bosam lefnei hamakim, see your love, so to speak, how Hashem loves you. Kechi bas zachor nekeva, like the fondness of a man and a woman. That's when the Jewish people saw it, so they would get a glimpse when they would oila l'regel. And actually, there's an interesting thing. I just want to show you one more interesting thing before we discuss, and then we'll see another few beautiful concepts. But it says that there's a fascinating thing, because this was when they were oila l'regel, they saw the... Now, we mentioned before that it was interesting how the pasuk described them, that they were looking at each other, or were they looking at the lid? And it's interesting to understand what really was happening. So the Gemara in Yuma also, in Baba Basra, tells us something very interesting. I'll show you something very interesting. And also the question is, I'll read you the Gemara and it'll say. So it says like this, how did the Kruvim actually stand? In other words, what direction did they face? So Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Elazar, both of them say, so Rabbi Yechanan says, Pneyem ish el achiv, they stood with their faces towards one another, because that's what it said, they were facing each other. And one says, V'chad amar pneyem lebayis, that they were actually facing towards the pareiches, towards the kodesh. It's a very interesting thing. So which way was it? I mean, these were made of gold. Which way was it? So the Gemara will give us a few different ways of understanding how we can put it together. So he says, one of them says, okay, so he says like this, it's not difficult, he says, because one, kan bizman she Yisrael oisin ritzonei shel makayim, when the one who says that they faced each other, that is referring to when the Jewish people were doing what Hashem wants. Kan bizman she ein Yisrael oisin ritzonei shel makayim. Whereas the other opinion is when the Jewish people were not doing what Hashem wants, which means, it sounds like, which is a very big miracle, these are made out of gold, and yet somehow they have life to them, where they can actually change position. When the Jewish people were doing what Hashem wants, they actually looked at each other and they were hugging each other. When the Jewish people were not doing what Hashem wants, they sort of looked more towards the Kodesh, the idea being, they were saying like, why aren't you focused on what you're meant to be doing, following in Hashem's instructions, so to speak? But the truth is, he says an interesting thing, that in truth, perhaps they really had both, because it could be that it was a bit of an angle. So if you think about it, if it's in a little bit of an angle, they could have been facing each other as well as the Kodesh. And that's one way of putting them perhaps both together. So he says like this, a very beautiful thing, the Gemara finishes like this, Unkulus Hager Amar, so Unkulus, interesting, he calls him here Unkulus Hager, he says, Kruvim Maise Tzatzuin Hein. The Kruvim were formed like children. Umitsudadim pneihem, and their faces were angled towards each other. Kitalmid haniftar me rabbi, like the face of a student taking leave of his teacher. Now we know that when a student takes leave of his teacher, or you know, we would see that with somebody honorable, you don't want to turn your back to somebody you respect. So what do? But then again, you can't walk backwards. You might bump into something. So you go like on a sort of an angle, a side. And that's what these Kruvim were doing. They were like facing Hashem, facing the Jewish people, in a sense, had both aspects of it, if you want to say. So it has a combination. But we still don't understand 100%. I just want to see a drop more, a little bit about the Kruvim in a sort of, if you want to say, technical way, if you want to say, but to understand what this means. So I just want to show you something very beautiful. Before we go to the beautiful part, just one answer that we asked at the beginning. How could they have made these kruvim? Isn't it avodah zarah, right? Doesn't it sound like avodah zarah kind of a thing? So there's many different ways of looking at it that the Mefarshim answer, and they say like this, that when Hashem told the Jewish people to make these kruvim, he said you should make two kruvim, right? Specifically two golden images. And where are they? They're placed dafke in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on top of the Arein. So we learn two things here. First of all, if they would have made four Kruvim, that would have been Avodah Zarah. Can't do four, it says two. If they would make it anywhere else, that's also Avodah Zarah. So what does it mean? It means that Hashem wanted a specific thing, and we'll see, obviously it has a very big meaning, but these specific kruvim to be there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, if you do it exactly in accordance to the way Hashem prescribes, with the exact measure and the exact method, and put it in the exact place that Hashem says, that's not Avodah Zarah, that's following Hashem's instruction. But if you will make a kruv in your shul or in your home, or if you will make extra kruvim in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan, that would be deviating from what Hashem said, and then that would taka be considered doing Avodah Zarah. So you see something very interesting. This is a very interesting concept that says in Torah that there are many things that are forbidden, and Hashem has given us certain allowances where they're permissible, so to speak. It's a very interesting thing. And this is, as we say, with this idea of why would you do that anyways? What's the point? Because obviously it symbolizes and it represents something extremely beautiful and extremely holy. So the Rambam has an interesting view. The Rambam in Meir Nevuchim says that the Kruvim actually represent the idea of Malachim. What is the idea of Malachim? So we know that there's Hashem and there's us, we're people, physical people. That's the realities we are aware of. But there's also, besides us being physical beings, there are other creations in the world. They are not Hashem, but they are spiritual creations. And mainly, they are the Malachim. The Malachim, the angels, are not intermediaries. We don't need any intermediary between us and Hashem. But what are the Malachim? The Malachim are spiritual beings. And they sometimes serve as a conduit of Hashem's brachas for us, where Hashem, so to speak, if you want to say, condenses himself a little bit and then a little bit more and a little bit more. And they also sometimes serve as messengers for Hashem to us. So the very important thing, the Kruvim, according to the Rambam, represented this idea that there are malachim in the world. What's the idea? What's the idea that there are malachim? Why two Kruvim then? So he says like this, that we should be aware that yes, there are spiritual energies in the world, spiritual creations, but what we have to know is they are not Hashem. Malachim are not Hashem, and they don't have any power at all, at all, at all. And we don't serve them at all. That's why we make two Kruvim, not one. Because if we would make one, we might think that it's like a representative of Hashem. It's not a representative of Hashem. It's a creation, just like we are a creation. But they are spiritual creations. And they are there to make us, to enable us, so to speak, to pursue something a little bit higher, to go to the spirit. But we know as Jews that the spiritual world is just as much a creation as the physical world is. It is, perhaps godliness is more revealed there, but it is not Hashem himself. So that's why, again, why we have, that's according to the Rambam, the idea that we should be aware that there are these spiritual realms, and that's what the Kruvim represent. They represent the Malachim. But coming back, and I just want to show you, again, if we were in normal shir, I would have a copy properly, we would do the Kliyakar inside. But I'll just tell you a little bit what the Kliyakar explains. He explains beautifully that he says that the two Kruvim were made in the way they look like small children, to show us something very beautiful. It says like this. What do we call somebody who learns Torah as a Jew? We call them, some people say it, but it's not the correct way. We say a chacham. No, we say talmidei chachamim. We always refer to people who are learning Torah as talmidei chachamim. Even the greatest of the greatest, most knowledgeable person is called, how we praise it, a talmid chacham. What does a talmid chacham mean? A student. In secular world, if you call somebody who's still a student, that's a little bit derogatory. That means he's only on his way getting, moving up there. But in Yiddishkeit, we say that we are always a child. We are always a Talmud. And that's the only way to approach Torah. A true Talmud Chacham is somebody who views themselves more as a Talmud than a Chacham, so to speak. And that's why the Kruvim have this shape, this image, if you want to say, of a child. And this is the idea, as we've read already before with the Kliyakar, is very, very strongly, it's the concept of humility. That's the only way that we can approach Torah. But even more than that, the only way we can teach Torah or impart any messages and any values of Torah is if we view ourselves as children, constantly learning with a whole journey of life ahead of us. And that's a very important thing. That's what the Kliyakar says. Another thing he also says, and that's why he says also that children, we know, are also guiltless, they're innocent. And a Talmud Chacham, a true Talmud Chacham, should try his hardest. Obviously, we all try, but should try his hardest to constantly be walking in the way of innocence. And what does innocence mean? It means purity. And it means a person shouldn't be, a person has to be, not a hypocrite. A person has to be true to themselves, true to others. You find that children find it much more difficult to masquerade. When you see a child, you know exactly what mood they're in, right? It's, so to speak, whatever's inside is outside. As we get older, we put on different masks, we learn how to hide things, so here we see something very beautiful, that on top of the array, not only side by side, but on top, first, the first thing you see is this image of a child. That's what we have to make sure to try and internalize in ourself, this purity, this innocence, and then we can attain this level, and then we can also learn Torah and as well as teach Torah. So that's a very important thing. And the other thing also is that they look to each other, and that's a very important thing. What's the idea of looking to each other? Looking to each other is the idea of peace, that you look, so to speak, equally, if you want to say, this concept of coming as one. And also looking down. What is looking down? Because you have to be focused on the goal and on what you are imparting. It is not about promoting yourself. It's about promoting Torah. So you, so to speak, nullify yourself to the Arein, which is beneath you, the Luchais, which is inside of you, so to speak, and that's what you're representing. So it's a very, so as you can see, the Kli Yakar shows how it all fits together very beautifully in the shape and what they were. And this is all very powerful lessons for us to understand how it all works. Now, I just want to show you one more very, one or two more beautiful concepts. Okay, so one concept that we have, a very beautiful idea, we mentioned before that there was a difference of opinion between the Arein, between the Ramban and Rashi. So the Ramban said that they were actually, Rashi said that they it was one keli, and the Ramban said it was like two. Right, we said that's why you had to first cover it, then you know, then uncover it, then put the luchais in. What's the idea? So the Zayar says a very fascinating thing. Zayar says like this, that it's a very beautiful statement that we know we hear many times in English, but the words in the Zayar are tlas kishrin miskashrin dabida. There are three knots, three ties, so to speak, that are connected one to the other. Yisrael, Ayraisa, v'kutcha brichu. The Jewish people, the Torah, and Hashem. And usually what we explain, and this is actually represented by the Kruvim and the Arein, that the Jewish people, which might be represented sometimes by those children or Hashem's love of the Jewish people, are connected to Hashem how? Through the Torah, by means of Torah. We learn Torah, we become one with Hashem, we know what Hashem wants, we unite with Hashem, as the Zayar says, so it's the Jewish people, through the Torah, become united with Hashem. But the statement is an interesting one. Tlas Kishrin, the Zohar says, three knots are there to combine these three things. I think we've mentioned this in previous shiurim. If you think about that statement, there's a bit of a something wrong. Because if you want to connect three items, how many knots do you make? Two, right? Not three, two. For three items, two knots. One, two, right? Between one and two, and between two and three. What does plus three knots? So it's explained very, very beautifully that the truth is that in the general way and usually and in the revealed way, how does a Jew connect to Hashem? Through Torah. So that's the two knots. The Jew to the Torah to Hashem. But there is also a third knot, a very deep and powerful knot. And that's where the Jewish people are connected to Hashem beyond the Torah, so to speak, in a deeper way. That's, as we say, because we have this godly soul, the Nefesh HaLekis, and in the Nefesh HaLekis is made up, is literally a chelek eleka mimal mamish, literally a part of Hashem himself. There is the yechida, the special, innermost, inner part of the neshama, which is connected to Hashem no matter what. Any circumstance, any place, any situation, any condition. This is the third knot. That's the deep knot where a Jew is connected no matter what he's doing, no matter how he's acting, no matter who he is, no matter where he lives. This is the most incredible, powerful connection. Now, according to the Ramban, and it's not difference really of opinion, but the way the Ramban brings it out, and this is really the general way, and this is the way we, the truth is, this is the way we're meant to act in the first instance. We connect to Hashem by means of learning Torah and practicing and doing what Torah says. But Rashi, who is more pshutei shel mikra, who goes more into the simple with no added anything, so he shows us that there's even a deeper connection between the Jew and Hashem. And that's the connection where we are one with Hashem. And that's why, according to Rashi, it's two separate kelim. One is the Torah, the Arein, which holds the Torah, and the other are the Kruvim, where Hashem connects to us and speaks to us. So they're not necessarily connected, although we know that generally, how do they stand? They stand together. That's the way, that's the revealed way, and that's the way we can feel the connection. But nevertheless, if you want to talk about it technically, they are actually two separate kelim. So it's a very beautiful lesson for you to see from this little bit of a difference. Now, coming back to one other beautiful thing that we said before. We said that in the Gemara, it said that the that these Kruvim had, so to speak, a little interesting power. Even though they're made of gold, nevertheless, it seems they were able to change position. And sometimes they looked at each other, and sometimes they looked away, so to speak, towards the Kodesh. And it's when we were doing Hashem's will, they looked at each other, and they were almost hugging each other. And when we weren't, they looked away. So the big question that's asked is, then, if that's the case, Why is it that at the time of the Churban, as we discussed earlier, when the Babylonians wanted to make fun of the Jewish people, what did they do? They found these Kruvim, and what were they doing? They were hugging each other. We would think, at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, what would the Kruvim be doing? Looking away, that's right, away from each other, for sure. That's the most time that Hashem is, if you want to say, displeased. We're actually not acting, if you want to say, in the way that we ideally should be acting. So we have there's a few explanations actually given. On a simple level, it's a very interesting thing. There's a simple, if you want to say different approaches. So we say, like, on one level, we might say that the way that the Kruvim were hugging each other, Hashem did it to embarrass the Jewish people. As we said, that when the Babylonians took it out, and then they displayed it in the marketplace, and it was like an embarrassment. So that could have been, in a sense, almost a punishment. The other thing, another opinion is that this miracle of the Kruvim changing, being able to switch position, was only in the Mishkan. But in the Beis HaMikdash, perhaps we might say there's an opinion, they're made out of gold and they were always fixed in their position, and therefore they were always sort of in that position of hugging each other. That's another way of looking at it. But I want to show you something absolutely magnificent. This is from the Bnei Yisachar. The Bnei Yisachar says something so, so beautiful. So I just want to read you inside and translate, and then please ask if it's not clear. I'll summarize it afterwards. See if I can find my source inside. Sorry. Okay. I'm so sorry. I want to see if I could. No, I can't find it. I'm sorry, just one second. Okay, yes, I'll show you something beautiful. So the Bnei Yisachar says like this: Shamati b'shem harav hakadosh meireinu harav Reb Menachem Mikaretz. So he heard this in the name of Reb Menachem of Karetz, in the name, and he says like this, a very beautiful thing. Al hod amru razal b'tisha b'av noilad ben David, that on Tisha B'av Mashiach, another famous thing, that Mashiach is born on Tisha B'av, hatam hu liyais nishmas Mashiach ben David, hi neshama hayoyser gavaya v'kailelas. That the neshama of Mashiach is a very high neshama and a very general, all-inclusive neshama, contains all of our neshamas. And therefore, v'im kein tzrichin l'leida zeis ha-neshama zivug hayoyser elyein. So because of that, this neshama needed to have a tremendous, if you want to say, a tremendous high unity, so to speak, where Hashem was producing this neshama. Let's see what that means. We can understand this by understanding, if you look at simple love in the physical realm, in this world, like friendship, two friends, or a husband and a wife, when people are together all the time, you don't necessarily see, it's not displayed as much, it's not felt as heightened, the love. When does the love become very accentuated, very heightened, very felt? If Masha Ein Ken Kisharitzin Li Parade Ulaharchik Nodud Lizman Rav, but if they want to separate from each other, they want to go on maybe on a journey, and they know they will not see each other for a while, all of a sudden then the love, you feel it very, it comes to the fore and you really feel it strongly. You know, you see if you go into airports and departure lounges are not very, I don't like departure, but like arrivals, we see people, the cry, it's not easy to say goodbye. Somebody's going on a journey, they're going away, but that's when the love really comes to the fore. So he says a very interesting thing. Az yispalu hanefasha yispa'ava, you say, right, that's when the neshama is, you know, awakened with this tremendous love. Ava, Aza, very strong love, Migoidel Haga'aguyim, from the great yearning that they will have. And that's why there's actually a fascinating thing that if a husband and a wife are separating, it says if a husband has to go on a journey or a wife, then they should be together before. And he says a very beautiful thing. He says, therefore, what happened was that at the time of Tisha B'Av, Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed, and Hashem knew that in a revealed way, he will not be felt in the same way anymore. We won't have access to the revelation of Hashem as we had until then. And Golus, as we know, is a very long difficult journey that we're taking. And sometimes we feel quite alone. Sometimes in Golus, and most of the time in Golus, well, Hashem is definitely more hidden. And he's more remote in a sense. And therefore, it's like we're on this long journey away from Hashem. So at that point, it says, what happened was, the Bnei Yisrael says, he says like this, Al-kein li-yais ba-vay-neseinu ha-rabim, ha-pirut ben ha-dveikim na-seh b'tishabav, right? Because unfortunately, the way we were behaving, this separation took place on Tishabav. So, mikre ba-vay-neseinu ha-rabim, yoyim yitzia la-derech. So it's called, Tishabav is like a day where we are going out on a long journey. Says, and therefore, noilad mizeh ha-zivug Mashiach, ha-neshama ha-yoyser el-yoyna, the Kaileles Haben. Very interesting. And that's when Mashiach is born. Because at the point of that departure, the greatest love was displayed between Hashem and the Jewish people. And then what we see is something the Bnei Yisrael actually continues. So that's very nice. So the greatest love. But that was on that day when, so to speak, if you want to say, when it was the destruction. But he says, no, it's not the day of the destruction. We know when we talk about us going into Golos, we are feeling far, especially now. For most of us, it's quite a challenge. The whole world, it's such a challenging time. And for many people, they say they don't feel Hashem revealed. It feels like Hashem is really hiding himself in a sense. What we have to realize is it's true. We're on a long journey. But first of all, Hashem's love is the greatest at that point of departure. And that point of departure is constant. Every day that the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, it is destroyed. In other words, this is a constant departure. We're in the departure lounge permanently. But even more than that, on our journey, what do we say? When we went into Golos, Shechina Goluima, right? Hashem went with us. Hashem didn't leave us in Golos on our own. Hashem is here with us in Golos. It's harder to see him, harder to feel him, especially now. But what we know is, as we can see from those Kruvim, that specifically at the time of the Churban, and specifically now, when it feels like another Churban, if you want to say, in a very revealed, in a terrible way, we feel, we have to realize, and we have to access, and we have to really, really reveal that it really is a time when Hashem is showing his incredible, powerful, deep love. What we have to feel is that we are being hugged by Hashem, and that Hashem is embracing us and holding us, protecting us. But we have to, this is our part also, is to look for Hashem, not just to say, well, he's not there, so we don't see him, so therefore he's not there. Rather, we have to look harder. You know, sometimes as we get older, I say my eyesight gets worse. So we can just sit back and say my eyesight gets worse. But no, what do? You go to the optometrist and you get a stronger prescription. So now we have to look for a stronger prescription. We have to be able to look harder, to see better, to see deeper. And if we truly use that, we can. And Hashem does give us. He gives us the means in many different ways. As we say, not easy, definitely, but definitely possible. So I think, as I said, I'm going to leave it here, stop the share now. But Mirtz Hashem, hopefully, we'll soon, we'll come back together and we're able to do it a bit more properly. I ask forgiveness. I'm not very good with this kind of means of technology, and not only the technology, but I like seeing people. But I just want to wish everybody a Pesach kosher v'sameach, a kosher and freilich and Pesach. You know, every year we say, you know, Pesach is not an easy yontif. It's a hard yontif with a lot of stringencies and a lot of work. And we wish everybody it should be kosher. But what we have to remember is it also has to be sameach. And especially this year, we have to work on that we should have a yontif of joy, a yontif, which of course Hashem will ensure that it will be kosher. Hashem is, as we say, he's embracing us, he hasn't left us. But what we have to do is we have to make sure to put the simcha in, even though it's extremely challenging and extremely difficult. But we can do it. And in Mirza Hashem, Hashem will help. Before Rish Chodesh Nissen, it should be already Nisei Nissim, a beautiful month of miracles and miracles. And I think in Australia, just my little thing that Hashem showed us, I mean, it was terrible, the fires that we experienced, tremendous damage, tremendous suffering. In one day, Hashem was able to take it away. Just like Hashem brought this terrible thing, he could take it away. Imirza Hashem, and we should be together in Yerushalayim, bringing the Karban Pesach, all of us together this year in Yerushalayim, with everybody healed, everybody well, everybody healthy, and everybody happy. Imirza Hashem. So have a very, very good day. Okay. No, we won't do it next week, Leah. No, this will be the last. In Birz Hashem after Pesach, we'll start again. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Oh, thank you. Nice to hear your voice. Yeah, it's good to hear. Thank you, Leonie. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Yes. Okay. Beautiful. All right. Not that I know how to exit, but we'll...
Bye.
Okay. I'm looking how to exit. I'm not sure, but...
I think in the bottom corner it says stop video. Does it
say? I don't know. Oh, end meeting. Yes. Okay, so I'm going to click end. All right. Okay, bye. All right.
Did you leave?
Yeah.
You pressed one.